So good morning. So let me thank Rob and Lucien for inviting me to talk at this wonderful workshop. I've heard lots of interesting things during the week. So I'm going to talk about quantum models of CTCs. For some of you, I'll just probably be reminding you of some stuff. Others, maybe you haven't heard this before. And then this is all going to end up motivating a recent space-based experiment that was done that I'll tell you about. So let's see. I guess we all agree one of the strong motivations for looking at quantum indefinite causal structures is this attempt to resolve the incompatibility between quantum mechanics and general relativity. Of course, there is a standard approach to combining quantum mechanics and general relativity. That is to quantize the fields on a classical background metric. In some ways, this is analogous to semi-classical quantum optics, where you take the electromagnetic field as being classical, and the atoms as quantum. But the analogy kind of breaks down a bit because we don't know if the metric can actually be quantized. That's the expectation, but that hasn't been shown. Also, calculations can be quite difficult, and so approximations and assumptions need to be made. And the trouble with all this is that there's very few experimental tests, and so we kind of don't really know what are good assumptions or approximations, or even if it all works. The mathematics is beautiful, but until it agrees with experiment, we can't really be sure. So we know that, you know, for 80 years, people have been basically trying to quantize general relativity. So this is kind of the widely held belief is that general relativity will change at the microscopic scale in order to be consistent with quantum mechanics. But there's also the possibility that quantum mechanics might also have to change on the macroscopic scale to be consistent with general relativity. And this was kind of alluded to yesterday by Lucien in the way that general relativity came together, that both sides of the picture had to change. So I'm kind of interested in pursuing, thinking about this second one and what might be experimentally tested along those lines. So kind of in line with what we've been discussing at this conference, we can think about structures where causality is turned on its head. So particularly non-hyperbolic space-times where you can have closed time-like curves. Clearly these can lead to paradoxes in classical mechanics. Sometimes it seems you can get around those paradoxes, sometimes it's not so clear. But also quantum field theory is, you know, this program of just quantizing the fields on a background metric doesn't really work with CTCs, or at least you have to do some changes. So one intriguing possibility is that maybe the paradoxes and the inconsistent field theory can be resolved by a modification of quantum field theory. So here's a time-like wormhole with a CTC. The basic idea is that we've got a chronology respecting path here, the red one, but we can also scatter into the wormhole, go back into the past and come out again and find that the reason we scattered was our interaction with ourself, so to speak. Metrics like this were described by Kip Thorne and collaborators around the end of the 80s and really sort of started all these considerations of, well, if we can have such metrics, then what you know, how would things behave on them, first classically and then from a quantum mechanical point of view. So the question came up, what happens if we place quantum fields on this type of background? To discuss this, it's kind of easier to abstract this thing into a kind of circuit picture. So, and just consider qubits, so make it very simple for ourselves. So in this picture, you know, we've got our state coming in here, which corresponds to a quantum state coming in on this trajectory here from the past. And then we've got the future and the past, mouths of the wormhole here and here. And then this elastic collision, which allows you to couple in and out of the CTC, is represented by a unitary here. And so lots of people have studied circuits like this. And there's kind of two classes of solutions that have emerged as being kind of the most popular. The first one, which is kind of just an adaption of what you would do in normal quantum field theory, you just consider path integrals, and for each of the individual trajectories, you match those trajectories between the future and past mouth. What happens is you find that some of the trajectories are inconsistent, and so their amplitudes are suppressed. Other ones are okay. So then in the end, you end up with a state that's unnormalized because some of the amplitudes have changed. Then you have to renormalize it. I think this started, the idea of this approach started in Thorne's group, but it was developed by David Politzer in this paper from 94. It then got rediscovered as a teleportation circuit, first by David Pegg, and then by Charlie Bennett, and then eventually Seth Lloyd kind of popularized it around 2010, and colleagues, and in fact showed that it was this teleportation way of looking at it was the same as this path integral approach. So I'll talk about that a little bit more in a second, but I just want to introduce the other approach, which is very different. It's really looking at it from a quantum information point of view. And this is due to David Deutsch in 91. And instead of matching individual trajectories, he said we should consider the state going in here as a whole and just describe it by its reduced density operator. And we should take this as the physical object, if you like, and match it across the boundary from the future to the past. And it turns, so then what you have to do is find a density operator which is consistent with the circuit, and it turns out that you can always do that for any unitary here and for any input state. And so that removes any paradoxes. So both these approaches solve the grandfather paradox and other paradoxes of that kind, but in very different ways. The Deutsch approach just shows that you can always have such a solution. In the path integral approach, it happens because you renormalize, basically. Inconsistent trajectories just don't happen. And then you renormalize everything back up to probability one. So even though the path integral approach is sort of appealing because it's very close to the sort of standard approach you take, it has some very bizarre consequences, which I'd like to just discuss briefly now as a bit of an aside. In particular, it allows signalling to times before the CTC was even created. Or equivalently, it allows superluminal signalling across flat space. So these things are, you know, not allowed by general relativity. On the other hand, this Deutsch approach doesn't allow things like that to happen. So it's kind of fun to just explore how this can work. So this little circuit here is a radio to the past using a PCTC. So we have Alice here who creates a Bell state, and she keeps one arm and can measure it. The other arm she sends off to the future where Bob is, and Bob has a PCTC which he arranges in this circuit like this. And before he sends the state into the PCTC, he can either put a phase shift on or not put a phase shift on. Now, a straightforward way of calculating what happens is via this trick of it being equivalent to a post-selected teleportation circuit. So this is what the circuit looks like. And basically, you post-select on getting a Bell measurement equivalent to the Bell state you used to run the teleporter. And so if you just put it through there, then what you find is that this is the solution, where the plus or minus here depends on whether or not Bob put a phase shift on. And you see that if Alice measures in the diagonal basis, then she either gets a plus state or a minus state, deterministically dependent on whether Bob, sometime off in the far future, decides to put the phase shift on or not. So this is a really bizarre outcome. You'd think that would lead to paradoxes, but it doesn't. If you try and put things together, then it always, just the way this thing works, if you try to contradict it, then it will just suppress the amplitude of the thing you were trying to contradict it with, and you'll end up with a consistent solution. But nevertheless, it is pretty bizarre, and like I said, doesn't really fit with general relativity. On the other hand, if you use the Deutsch approach, then you get this outcome here from this identical circuit. So basically, it just completely scrambles both Alice and Bob's output. So the important thing from the point of view of the effect of the CTC not leaking into flat space, so to speak, or allowing effects back in time, is that this state is just exactly the reduced state that Alice would expect if she just lost the other qubit. So there's no effect of, no matter what Bob does, she just gets the state that she would expect from normal quantum mechanics. On the other hand, the transformation of taking a Bell state into a direct product of two marginal states like this is illegal in quantum mechanics. So this is a nonlinear interaction. So that's not, so the DCTC does weird things too, but it does it in a local way that doesn't spread beyond the CTC itself. So from the point of view of this conference, I think it's kind of important to just remember that these things are weird, because I mean, we've been discussing things, like the causal inequalities and the quantum switch, in which embedded in the description are basically PCTCs. So I think it's just kind of important to realize that these things are really quite bizarre. And maybe, something interesting to do is to see what happens to some of these things if you employ a DCTC instead. Anyway, this is really just a motivation to say, well, it's interesting to look at this Deutsch solution and think about what would that mean for quantum field theory. So I come back to this question of quantum mechanics must change on the macroscopic scale to be consistent with general relativity. And now sort of talk about it in a more sort of operational point of view of what sort of things might we think might change. And entanglement, I guess, is at least conceptually the thing that is very sort of seems to be in conflict with relativity because of its apparent non-local properties. We could think about in special relativity, does entanglement have a finite range or something like that? But given that the metric is just constant everywhere, there doesn't seem to be anything that would cause that. But of course, the picture's not quite the same in general relativity. You've got a varying metric. Maybe that might have some effect on the entanglement. So, you know, given GR is a local theory and entanglement is non-local, then we might think about is entanglement affected in some way unexpected, perhaps from quantum field theory, by curvature. So we've got some curvature around us, so maybe we can do something with it. So we might think about, well, under what conditions might we expect something to happen? If something was to happen, what would be the kind of minimal conditions for that to occur? So we could think about an experiment where we're distributing, you know, say, single photons from the ground, perhaps to the International Space Station, and just think about when is gravity going to have a non-trivial effect, or curvature have a non-trivial effect? So let's imagine we're watching this going on from a long way away. So we can describe this in the Schwarzschild metric, and we could time it with our clock a long way away and see how long it takes the photons to travel from the ground to the space station. We could also imagine measuring the distance directly with a ruler, and then we notice that. You know, these two are different, so we would conclude that the photons are not traveling at the speed of light, which is, of course, a well-known result of curvature. And so they're going to arrive late by an amount like this, if we were considering the International Space Station, which in more familiar units is you know, about two-thirds of a picosecond. So the idea is that, well, if the uncertainty in time of my photons, so the temporal length of my photons, is shorter than this sort of length, then that's kind of a necessary requirement for there to be, for me to see anything on the entanglement. If they're much longer than that, then this shift from the curvature is going to be insignificant compared to the uncertainty in the photon arrivals. So I'm surely not going to see anything there. Okay, so now what could happen? So this next bit's going to seem a little bit crazy at first, but then I'll try and justify it by going back to CTCs. So what does the standard approach say in a situation like this? Well, I send my photons. The standard approach says that the gravitational curvature just acts like a, you know, some sort of refractive index or something. It just slows down the photons, and so they arrive a bit late. So how else could it be? Well, let's put a crazy adversary in who's trying to trick us. So I'll call her Grace. And she can see what Alice is doing. So she can see what states Alice is preparing. And so she decides to try and trick Bob. And so she's just going to introduce new states that she's prepared based on what she observed Alice doing. And she's just going to delay them in time. She's just going to substitute them here and send them off to Bob. So Bob's going to be none the wiser. Grace can see exactly what Alice is doing. So she's just receiving the same state she's expecting, just delayed a bit. So a question might be, can Alice do anything to stop this? Can Alice make sure that Bob can tell the difference? And she can. So what she has to do is now send in tangled states. And in addition, she'll send off the other arm of her entangled states to another player, Victor. And Victor is space-like separated from both Grace and Bob. Because of this, Grace can only see what Alice is doing. So he can see exactly what she's doing. She's preparing these entangled states. He knows exactly what the states are she's preparing. However, he can't see what measurement results Victor is getting. So all she can do is prepare the reduced state consistent with the state that Alice is producing. So she does that. She produces this mixed state that corresponds to this mixed state, delays it in time, sends it to Bob. Initially, Bob is none the wiser. But of course, if Bob compares measurement results with Victor at some later time, then he's expecting to see correlated results that indicate that the overall state was this global entangled state. But the state that Alice has been sending is completely uncorrelated with that. It's just some mixed, independent mixed state, and therefore that test will fail. And the upshot of what they'll see is that they'll see that the entanglement go away. So it's a bit of a crazy story. But if you look at what Deutsch's theory is doing, that's essentially what's happening. The CTC substitutes a new state that is in the local state that was that was going in here and puts it here. So far I've told the story in a sort of Heisenberg picture type of a way. Sorry, a Schrodinger picture type of a way. If we think about it in the Heisenberg picture, then what this implies for the field modes is that their commutator is decaying along the geodesic under certain conditions. So you can see this from my toy picture. If you just look at in the Heisenberg picture what the commutator is at various places along this mode, if I consider two different space-time points, A1 and A2, along the mode along the geodesic, then basically that's just describing the same mode. And so the commutator between those is just the usual boson commutator. But if I compare with A3, well, now A3 is just a completely independent mode. And so A1 and A3 commute. So from the point of view of the field modes, what Deutsch's analysis is saying, or his way of solving the CTC problem, is to have the effect that the commutator between along the geodesic goes to zero. Just go back and just notice this is kind of necessary. If you look at these, here's a space-like separated points, okay? So in normal quantum field theory, they must commute because they're space-like separated. But on the other hand, if I follow this geodesic through the CTC and back out again, I see that actually they lie on the same geodesic. And so they shouldn't commute. So this is how it's built into the in you know a consistency is built into the field equations. Anyway, 10 years ago, we thought about this and we tried to come up with a toy model for how you might incorporate this into quantum optics. So this is just a normal mode operator in quantum optics. And what we did was we tacked on, an additional degree of freedom, which depended on your, basically the curvature that you were going through this through this term here, which is basically just looking at the locally measured time along the geodesic, and then this phase is a function of how that differs from a global time along the geodesic. So this thing was designed so that in flat space, it would just go back to the normal operator and give you commutator remaining constant along the geodesic. But in curved space, you could get situations where the commutator would go to zero. We had some follow-up papers on this. Mentioned this one particularly from Jacques, who's here, in which we showed that indeed these, what we called event operators, could then reproduce the Deutsch solution, but in a way where you could sort of gradually go between the two. So if you had photons that were really long going through a CTC, then you'd basically see no effect because, you know, the time that they went back in time was very small compared to the uncertainty in the time. But if you had very short ones, then you would go to the Deutsch solution. A significant motivation of this also was, well, okay, under what conditions might we see this in an experiment? And we started talking to Rupert Urson and the Space Quest group. Rupert's based at Vienna, and we started it. We put together a proposal that appeared in this paper for how one might do it with this sort of setup. So distributing entanglement from the ground to the International Space Station, detecting it on the ground and on the space station, and looking for some sort of decoherence effect. Of course, when you sort of get into the details of how to do this, things get a lot more complicated and technically very challenging because of the very high attenuation on this link and the problem of synchronizing things between the space station and the ground, et cetera, et cetera. And taking, you know, all the experimental issues into account when doing the theory. The basic prediction was that if this event formalism was correct, then you would see a decoherence effect like this. So we pitched this to the European Space Agency and they were interested in it. And there was lots of meetings and it even went to the stage of going out to tender. But then somehow or other it all stopped. I don't exactly know why, but nothing happened for a few years. Meanwhile, our proposal was on the archive. And also meanwhile, the Chinese launched a Misius quantum satellite. So this is a fantastic bit of technology. The group leader is Zhenwei Pan. So one of the first things they did was to distribute entanglement from space to the ground over an extremely long distance. I thought just to illustrate how amazing this this machine is. I just highlight this result first. So they were able to distribute entanglement over 1,200 kilometres and violate a Bell inequality, albeit with not a lot of data, but clearly you can see the correlations there. Now, this is entanglement distribution over a long distance, and there's a gravitational gradient there, but from the point of view of this event operator formalism, nothing is predicted to happen in this situation because of the symmetry. Both states see the same gravitational field, and so we don't predict anything to happen. But they did another experiment in which they distributed entanglement from the ground, and the idea of that experiment was to do teleportation from the ground to space. But when they looked at our proposal, they saw that they could adapt that experiment very easily to test exactly the proposal we had made. And so that's what they did. And at some point I became involved in this. And this paper was published just a couple of months ago. And so now I'm just going to tell you about those results. So this is how it was set up. So we have source of entanglement. This is on the ground. So we can produce an entangled state here. One arm of the entangled state is measured on the ground, and then the other arm goes up to the satellite, where it is detected with single photon counters. In addition, they could also produce a coherent state and split it up and send the coherent state along exactly the same path. So the point of this is that coherent state is a separable state. So again, the event formalism says nothing should happen to correlations for a coherent state. And so you could compare the correlations you saw with the coherent state over exactly the same conditions directly with the correlations you see for the entangled state. An additional thing they did was, remember in my little story, I had Victor sitting space-like separated from Bob. So they also implemented a fiber spool here so that they could guarantee that the measurements on the ground here, effectively Victor, were space-like separated from the measurements made in the spaceship. In our proposal to the ESA, we were hoping to have effective pulse lengths of about maybe 0.8 of a picosecond, but you see actually they have much shorter pulses in the Chinese experiment, basically limited by this filter in the actual satellite. Also, the International Space Station is at about 300 kilometres, but the Mikias satellite is at 500 kilometres. So we actually would predict an even stronger effect with this setup. These are just the paths of the satellite. It turned out for technical reasons the easiest thing to do was to do the transmissions when the satellite is at an angle of about between 40 and 60 degrees. So these were various passes that were made, and the data was taken within this gray region.
Excuse me, Tim. You put that interference filter in front of the detector to strengthen correlations. What was the purpose of this?
No, the interference filter is there to filter out spurious photons.
Yeah, so that you have like higher coincidence to single ratio. Is that the reason?
To remove accidentals, yes. So that was a design choice made before it was launched and had nothing to do with doing this experiment. But the width of that filter determines how narrow the photons can effectively be. Okay, so here are the results. the orange dots are the coherent states. The open dots are the entangled states. Here is where you don't guarantee space-like separation, and here you do guarantee space-like separation. And you see that, this is basically a normalized thing where you're basically normalizing against what you the number of coincidences you're expecting versus the number of coincidences you get. So that's why it's hovering around one for the coherent state, but you see it also hovers around one for the entangled state. So we see no decay in the correlations and therefore decoherence of the entanglement. On the other hand, the prediction from the event formalism is that there should be a really strong suppression. So we see no evidence of that. Okay. Yep.
You call it this observer Victor, right? That's supposed to be space-like.
Mm-hmm.
Was it really space-like or just effectively space-like because of this delay line?
So what do you mean? What's the difference between effectively and really?
Well, I mean, if you delay, then you're still at a location that's close. If you actually send it far away, then...
Yes, but it's the detection that matters. You want the detection to be space-like separate.
So that's not a loophole here. It really is space-like.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah. okay. So does that kill it? not quite. First of all, when I described this story to you, I was comparing what goes on locally to what a faraway observer would see. But you might ask, is that really the right thing to do? Maybe it makes more sense that the effect would come in as a function of the difference between the clocks on the actual satellite versus the clocks along, you know, the measure along the path. And because we're only at, you know, 500 kilometers, there is a big difference between far away asymptotic flat space and what's going on here. So if you put that in, you can come up with a different prediction. And that looks like that. And unfortunately, we're in the noise, so we can't really rule out that possibility. In order to rule that out, you would need either to have the satellite at a higher altitude or to make the photons shorter. But as I said, you can't really make the photons shorter given that there's this frequency filter on the satellite, and so you can't get around that. More generally, I guess you could think about this model and consider other mechanisms for how the commutator should decay. We kind of took the simplest sort of idea that it was just the proper time along the path and that difference, but you might say, well, you know, maybe it has something to do with the non-conformality of the of something like a CTC metric or something like that. So you might consider, you know, maybe this only appears when you have something like frame dragging effects or something like that. So I think there's lots that can still be thought about in this space. But currently, this first experiment passes the test, and quantum field theory under these conditions correctly gives the right predictions. Okay, so I'll finish up now. So I think there are good reasons to test quantum field theory on a curved background. The mathematics seems to say that this is the most consistent way of doing things, and that's nice, but until we have data points. I don't think we can be really sure. And maybe there's surprises in store. I hope I've also convinced you that considering space times with indefinite causal orders can motivate such tests, can give you, you know, like, experimenters can't test everything, so we have to give them speculative theories and saying, well, you know, maybe if you look in this regime, you'll see something interesting, or at least rule it out. And I showed you the first satellite-based test of gravitational decoherence. I mean, it's kind of a generic feature of models that try to do something that preserves GR more versus quantum, that they tend to lead to decoherence effects. So you could also view this as a general test of those sorts of models and showing at least a first order no effect. And it also make the point that trying to do these tests are key technology drivers because they're not easy. And I'll finish there and say thank you.
Interesting. I was wondering, you said before that this whole selected timeline curves, because of the allowed signaling, they are somehow in contradiction to GR. I was wondering, isn't it the case that when we consider this type of probabilistic signaling, even with a classical version of this PCTC model, we would still signal somehow. Both might, and they share randomness and both supposed free choice. You can decide whether to do a NOT gate or not or something like that. That's gonna kill one of the possibilities.
Yeah, so if in that setup I showed Alice was just producing a separable correlated state, like 1-1 or 0-0 plus 1-1, something like that, then indeed you could still send information to the past, but only in one basis. If you use entanglement, I didn't say this, but with entanglement I can rotate. Bob could rotate the basis and send messages in any basis. So that's the main, but essentially your point is correct. This sort of weird thing happens even with classical correlations. Yep.
The satellite test, it seemed like the stuff that was on the satellite, there wasn't much stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So can you put this on like a cube satellite or something like that, on these smaller ones? Like, because if you, I think you just need the detectors and maybe...
Yes, I just look back to the picture. Yes, that's quite right. I should emphasize though that that's what was used in this experiment.
Right.
In the experiment where they distributed entanglement to the ground, they used the fact that they actually have one of these things sitting on the satellite.
Right.
But you're correct, for an experiment like this, you only need the detectors. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, there's various proposals for setting up CubeSats. And there's been the Singapore group has done some simple experiments where they have CubeSats with little detection and stuff like that on it. Yeah. So that's probably the future.
So it seems that this model or evolutions of this model can reasonably be in the ballpark of experimental physics. And so you can imagine that maybe would be reasonable to expect that they could all be disproved. I mean, maybe not all, but to a reasonable degree.
Yep.
So what would you think in that case? Would you think that then there should be a different model for CTCs, or that maybe this would imply CTCs shouldn't be there in the first place?
Yeah. I'm not sure. I mean, yeah, I guess what it says is that quantum in some sense would be winning over GR in the sense that the PCTC solution or alternative, if we accept that there are CTCs, then it would indicate that the something more like the PCTC solution was probably more likely. And maybe we have to accept that GR is, you know, the basic principles of GR are just not correct in that sense. But I'm not sure. Maybe, as you say, the other possibility is that there's some other model for CTCs that nobody's thought about yet. Or indeed that they simply, for some reason, can't exist.
I have some technical questions about the setup, the Bible crystal. Isn't it like type 1 or type 2 dumb conversion data?
This is...
Looks like
this is type 2, I think, because we're producing two different polarizations and then mixing them together on the PBS to split them
and
up.
Then you have two detectors on each side because you have it like loses half of the photons because you use the Bronson-Mann scheme where there's a chance that either both two photons go either to the left or to the right. Is this correct? You produce a single.
We don't really need this in this experiment. This is basically to look at the different polarizations.
Oh, okay.
So this was originally used for a teleportation experiment.
That beam splitter, that cube over there, right? In front of the detector.
Yes, so that'd be a PBS.
Mm-hmm. And you know the rates roughly? How many clicks do you get? So like each side. Is there like series suppression of single counts on the ground versus on the satellite, or it's roughly the same order? Just wondering how many.
Oh, there's much more counts on the ground than on the satellite.
It's like an order of magnitude, or
I don't know technical details like that. Sorry.
Okay. Yes, I think we need to move on to the next speaker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, shall we thank you again?
Thanks.